Welcome to the BMX News Announcers Tower Podcast. I'm Mike Carruth. Box Components Chief Toby Henderson dropped some news this week that he is expanding his efforts in the BMX market with the founding of a new venture, the American BMX Company. We're excited and anxious to get Toby to come back on the show to talk about the road ahead for the new company and also get his unique points of view on other BMX-related topics. So, Toby, welcome back to Announcers Tower. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Yes, sir. Great to have you back. Let's jump right in because I don't want to take a lot of your time today, but I do want to get all of the good stuff in. Tell us a little about the news, the American BMX Company, and what its focus will be and sort of where you as a BMX visionary are heading. So let's start with tell us about the American BMX Company part.
Yeah, so actually we started the company, it's been almost 2 years ago. I just didn't announce my involvement in the beginning for various reasons. And then now that we are here about ready to ship some product, I thought I'd let people know that I've been involved since the beginning with Mark Cote, my partner, who's a guy I met a few years back. We hit it off really well. He's an old BMX racer who was really good in his day in Quebec, Canada. He's one of the top guys in the late 80s, so he's a lot of background. But he wound up being in the movie industry, the film industry, for the last, 15, 20 years of his life. And he's got some young kids, and they wanted to race BMX again, so he wanted to get involved, and he came to buy some box stuff a few years ago for his kids. And next thing you know, we're friends, and we decided to take this brand, Race Inc., which is a brand that I always enjoyed, which is the same bike that he rode when he raced, and turn it into something. And we were able to buy that from Chris Hancock, who was trying to give it a go, but his other job got in the way. And so Mark and I decided to create a parent company called American BMX Company and put underneath of that these brands that we're acquiring and buying and creating to create something like I had at VSI, over 10 years ago. So,
yeah, and interestingly, one of my questions down the line a little bit talks about 10 years ago and some of that momentous news, with the merger happening 10 years ago, this year and stuff. So we're going to talk about that. But so you've got Race Inc., and I've seen just some, obviously we've seen the ads in Pull Magazine. We've seen some, social media drips on the Race Inc. product. So when do we actually see one of those in the flesh at a, at a track or here in the BMX News labs?
Yeah, quite honestly, probably we're hoping to see one of the two models we're building. The one you've seen in Pool is our what are called our Elite frame. And then we also have a Neo Retro frame coming that I think might be in the new Pool or some kind of Banksy-type ad in the next Pool, kind of showing that direction too, where we'll have basically two different types of frames we're going to offer. One more traditional looking, and then of course the spaceship bike that you've seen in the current Pool ad. Anyway, so we're hoping to show the Neo Retro bike at the Grands and have at least the box team on them, if not some other riders for Race Inc. But that's what we're pushing for. And I think that everybody, your listeners probably know that the bike industry right now is very tough, long lead times to get product. So developing product and getting product out of Asia right now is extremely tough. But we're in line and we're getting it. And we're actually starting to sell some items for Retro BMX as early as next month, frames. And we're selling some stuff right now under the Cook Brothers brand in the retro scene right now. So we've basically been only selling the last couple months. And you'll see the race stuff, hopefully some of it at the Grands.
So Cook Brothers, that was certainly, a storied brand from the 80s or late 70s, early 80s, and so that's another brand that's in the stable there. What are there any others that are part of it that will bring us back?
Yeah, the things I can speak about is one is Botima. We were able to trademark and put together Botima forks for the retro crowd. You won't see that in race, but for the retro crowd, along with Cook Brothers too. Most of Cook Brothers products you'll see will be kind of designed for the retro crowd, but there is overlap. I mean, you know, the cogs are the same, the sprockets are the same, some of the stems are the same. So you'll see some crossover between, you know, race and retro, but the stuff is designed and geared towards retro for Cook Brothers and Botima for sure. Race Inc., we're going to do both retro. That's the bikes coming and race soon. The other brands, we did sign an agreement with Tongue BMX to be the exclusive brand and developer of Tongue BMX parts moving forward. And there's probably about four or five other ones I can't mention right now. it's very BSI-ish where we'll have multiple brands doing multiple different divisions in the sport of BMX, both race and retro. And that's going to keep us quite busy for the next 5 years, I'm sure.
Well, and so when do you think that the supply chain thing will start to flatten out and normalize a little bit? I mean, it's not only bike industry; it's certainly not only BMX. It's, you know, it's across the board, across all industries. Yes. You know, I mean, is it going to be many years, you suppose, before it's back to a normal?
I don't know. It's funny. I was just in a conversation about a T-shirt. Someone bought a T-shirt from our website. They didn't get it for a period of time. They were all upset about a T-shirt. And it came in. So we dug it in a little bit, just flat out the T-shirt. And that size wasn't available. It's just gone, right? There's no place to get one. And so even T-shirts are in the same position. But right now, I think my opinion is, and what I understand from the industry is, we'll probably start to be another year before we start to see things loosening up. But the sales of this product, we understand, will not decrease for the next 10 years. Hmm. So, which is great for the bike industry, but catching up is one thing. It's probably going to be until 23 before we start to see some kind of reprieve, in my opinion.
So you had said, you know, that it's super tough to get product out of Asia. Now, obviously, that's the place that most of the product comes from, but that's not the only place in the world. So do you think that that'll give some, you know, some increase in business to American manufacturers, or are they kind of in the same boat here just based on raw materials and so forth?
Well, it's a great question because I really tried hard to do as much as we could here in the U.S. And I know, especially for the retro crowd, that's something that's extremely important to them. But Mike, I talked to no less than 10 people who should be able to manufacture a frame in the U.S., people with experience, people who got what I wanted to do. But one of two things have happened between most of these. One, my quantities are too big. Mm. So the small shops couldn't handle the type of quantities I'm asking for. That was one. And the other one was the cost was so astronomical because of the tubing shortages and some of the raw material shortages that even the guys who said they would make me a lot of frames at once, the number was so high that it'd be what I think the market could bear on the retail side. So there's no money in it. It's straight from the manufacturer to the consumer. I know the consumers want a USA-made product, but if that product costs as much as what I think the market can bear on a retail standpoint, you can't do it here. So that's what I ran into. And honestly, most of them turned me down anyway. I mean, that's, what would it cost? And then when you start getting to the numbers of MSRP, I'm thinking, can I make it work? And then at the end of the day, they didn't even want the orders anyway. And I'm talking about people, names you know and names the industry knows and just didn't want them. Scared of the size of the order, scared of time frame, scared of something, but I could not get it done here.
So. Wow. Wow. I mean, that's just shocking. And I guess it gives some, put some light on the reality of, you know, whatever your intent, you know, you as a manufacturer, whatever your intentions are as far as wanting U.S. made or wanting to try and make it work, it's, you know, there are more market forces and, you know, alignments and business goals and stuff that sometimes just make it impossible. So,
well, and on the flip side, I did try to make a handlebar here, you know, my 31.8 tapered handlebars, and we're coming out with some under the Cook Brothers brand that have the retro shapes, something you wouldn't race, but has the same concept of oversized, because that's a big part of what we're trying to do at ABC. And I couldn't. I went to every header maker, every tubing manufacturer, anybody, and a lot of guys were giving me time to explore with me. It wasn't like these guys didn't want to explore, but when it came to nuts and bolts, you know, they're going to build me a handlebar for my retail price, right? And then they didn't even really want it. You know, the guy's making so many headers for motorcycles right now. Mm. He didn't really care. You know, so it wasn't just the frames. I kind of want to point that out. But on the good note is we make all our chain rings in America, every one of them, because there's a supplier in America that has reasonable prices that allows us to make our margin, sell it at a reasonable price to the end user. And if I go to quote those chain rings in Asia, they're roughly the same price.
Mm.
Okay, that makes sense. I'll make it here. And it's funny is when we make it here, we have to package it ourselves, and me and the family will sit around the TV and zip tie chain rings to header cards. But that's okay, right? Because no one wants to do that job either in the U.S., you know.
Right.
Rings to header cards, and that's not fun. But anyway, so we do try to make stuff here. It's just not a reality of what we're willing to spend on something that's made here and or the manufacturing ability to make it here. So
is that the Box product that the chain rings are made here, or is that one of the other brands, the newer brands?
Actually Box and Cook Brothers are okay. made here.
Wow. Yeah. That's cool. I didn't know that. So see, I'm learning stuff from this podcast as well.
Yeah. ODI makes our grips, so we make grips here, and it's cost effective. I mean, they're a good 20% more than overseas, but they're 30% better. So, you know, it is what it is. So we do make a couple things here, but it's tough. All the T-shirts are made here, obviously. But, Mike, I try to make stuff in the U.S. I always look at it as an option, but it's just in the sport of BMX and BMX racing and retro, it's just – there's not enough people to make the stuff here that makes it work. So,
one of the things you talked about in the release that was sent out this week to industry sources was talking about the retro market sort of coming into its own, you know, becoming more mature into the of a market. So what do you suppose brought that about, and what are your thoughts in terms of where, you know, you had said just a moment ago that you kind of had a 10-year view on things. Let's start with the first part of the question, though, as far as what do you suppose brought it about as far as the maturity of that retro space?
Well, first I want to say I was wrong when I looked at this space, you know, many years ago, and I saw what SE Racing and Todd Lyons is doing. He was doing a fantastic job, and I saw what he was doing. I thought, great for you, Todd, and great for your thing, whatever. And I looked at it like it's like skateboards or whatever. Some people say it's going to go away. 10 years later, it's not going away, and it is probably bigger than it ever has been. But I think the reason is simply this, Mike. I think that there's guys who basically couldn't afford or didn't get or whatever back when they were our age, back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, who just didn't get the bike that they wanted or couldn't afford it or whatever reason, right? Now these guys have got jobs and they've got a little bit of extra income, and what are they going to do with it? And I think they're buying big BMX bikes and they're riding around their neighborhoods or the beach or whatever with these things. And it's become almost like a cult, or I don't say cult, but almost like a, you know, just a whole group of people that are enthusiasts who remember the magazines, who remember riders like myself, who want to have a bike that looks like the past, but also has upper tech or newer technology. And when I realized, you know, a couple of years ago, they want that technology, they really do, and that's a whole nother conversation, is when I decided to jump in to take what I know at Box and give it to a whole nother segment. And what we're trying to do is on ABC as a whole is to bring technology to retro and, of course, to race. Because race, we want to be the Formula One of the bikes. We just definitely want to be that. And when you start to see the frames and the frames that were – all the attributes of the frames we're working on, you can see that we really spent a lot of time in developing cutting-edge, let's say, oversized-type interfaces and products. And then we're going to take that same idea and push it to retro. But back to your question is, I think these guys – have expendable income. BMX was their sport as a kid, and they're just coming back and playing with it again. Really that simple.
And do you suppose that those folks will be, you know, will find their way to a racetrack, or it's just a street riding thing? I know, like in the SE side of things, you know, it's bike life is a, you know, it's an urban phenomenon, really, and it's not necessarily guys who you'd find at a vintage BMX event, but maybe it's a big tent and everyone can ride as one, like they say.
Yeah, you know, I think there's the whole collector scene, and this is not the target we're going after, because I'm not going to go make repop a Botima 1-inch fork with threads on it, because there's a dozen guys out there that need them for the frames that they have from the 70s. It's not the intention of us. Our intention is to bring that Botima fork that looked like it did back then, but bring it in at 1 1/8 inches and with a head stem and the technology that we have today. So that's the group that we're going after. I think that they will make it to the BMX track. I don't think that's going to happen. Of course, a 29-inch bike does not do well around a BMX track. Mm. So what's the point? Is it more than just the urban guys doing wheelies down the middle of Philadelphia? I think so. I think that we have this group of guys. It's not the historic guys, you know, collecting, but there's two groups with inside this new bike. It's the younger guys doing wheelies and riding crazy down the street, which is all fun and great, as long as they don't get hurt. And there's also the older guys who simply want a gold anodized bike with three parts and will ride it with his wife at the beach or on these rides. There was one in Santa Cruz last Saturday. It was supposed to have 5,000 people there. It got rained out. So I think, I don't know the total of the crowd, but it wasn't quite the 5,000 they were expecting. But it was thousands of riders on big BMX bikes riding around the city of Santa Cruz. Nice. Santa Cruz is a really nice town. It's beachfront. It's got this little small, you know, old street, main street feel. And they just took over the town for a few hours and rode around and enjoyed each other and then went on to dinner and spent a bunch of money in that town, you know. So I think that and the guys who do the wheelies at cars are the two groups that enjoy these bikes.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, as a kid, I definitely drooled over the anodized gold race ink in the window. And they wouldn't sell it to me, actually, even when my mom had the money to buy it, because they said that, you know, I was too big for it. And so now this will be my chance, maybe, you know.
Yeah, and there's a lot of guys, just with a similar story, Mike, a lot of guys. And, you know, honestly, I'm looking at fourfold. I think that we'll sell four retro bikes to one race bike. That's what it's looking like it's going to happen. So we put a lot of effort into the retro bikes out of the gate to help us fund the F1-style race frames that we want.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, that cash flow is surely going to help our bid on bringing this crazy technology to racing. So
the bike that we've seen in the ads then, like that, will that be like, will we be able to see that in the flesh at the Grands, or is that going to be
that's the elite frame. And actually this morning I was working on tooling deposits and things like that to get that frame done. So, you know, there's some samples floating around, but to do the production, we have to open a lot of tools because of this crazy thing that we're doing. I don't say it's crazy. I think it's just very advanced. And so I don't think we'll see that at the Grands. Not the one you've been seeing.
Okay.
That's the – yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So as far as the product line of the new, you know, of the new company, and you've told us a little about it, but will you guys be making some component parts that are parallel to the box line, or – will you be sourcing product from the box line and bringing it over as box branded?
No, the box is race for us. And even with inside ABC, when we go racing with components, 9 out of 10 times they're going to be a box product, right? And there'll be some crossover, like I said, with Cook Brother chain rings. It's a chain ring for retro, is the same for race. So if a kid wants a blue chain ring box doesn't make it, he's going to wind up buying the Cook Brothers one. So there's some overlap there. But ultimately, the racing product will remain under box. And we're going to build the frames and all the stuff around the ideas the box have, right? But, you know, eventually you'll see some overlap. Like I said, the overlap will probably grow in time. But ultimately, for components, it's box's territory in this venture.
So one question that I always have, and it's really one that's perfect for you, is that, BMX is such a small market, and you know, we really deal in many fewer zeros at the end than other cycling disciplines do.
Exactly.
You know, both in product size and in dollars and cents. And, yes. And so for yourself, I mean, you have, you had a BMX background, then you had a very successful mountain bike career. You've done BMX as a business for a long, long time. You've actually done very well, establishing Box as a brand in mountain bike. And so yet you're coming back to do more with BMX, by way of this American BMX company. So what brings you back? And obviously you've got to have some sort of commercial aspirations, like, hey, we can make some success business-wise as well as making an impact. So do you see BMX, as a market that can increase? Like, I mean, it seems to me like it's really almost not even worth it in some cases to put effort behind it. Help me get the faith back.
Well, I'm glad you say all that, because you definitely got your finger on the pulse. You said something was really key there, which helps explain my last answer about will we make race stuff not under Box. And it goes back to what you just said. The money that's invested into the Box brand to make racing product, I would not invest into another brand. Talking about tooling, inventory, and design and development and marketing, I wouldn't do with another brand, because there's not enough space in BMX race for another brand to do as well as Box. So why compete with myself, and why spend the money on, like you said, a very small market? So that being said, why would I do this? Well, making a frame allows me to make better and more innovative parts, because you have to interface the crank to the frame, so I'm limited on what frame makers are willing to do or the time frame they have to work with. And so all these years, when I didn't have VSI, I was making all I could within the arena that I had, and not having my own bike really slowed that ingenuity, or whatever you want to call it, down. So this is going to help me now make better race products. And what we found during this is we found this whole retro thing to be, like, I think about four times as big as race. So that alone, wow, even though it's the same person, the same genre, the same vendors, the same everything, just in bigger bikes, I found, well, let's get this done. Let's get some cash flow, and let's start to hang these really exotic parts onto retro bikes as well in the future as they come around. But it's going to allow Box and everything I'm doing to expand to the levels that I, as just a Box component maker, could ever be, right? I was stuck in exactly what you said. I can only make BMX racing parts under the Box brand so big, and that's it. And I was there. I've been capped for the last 5 years.
Right.
So,
yeah. So, when you come into the mountain bike space, obviously there's some big budget, brands and some big budget players over there. You have some very top end products. You personally have a name in that space, at least among some audience. So do you find it easier or harder, or how do you find it when you step into that other club?
Well, that's a whole thing. When I first started the mountain bike scene, and like you said, I had a successful career as a racer in it, so I know it really well. I know the bikes well. I had spent the same amount of time in my mountain bike career as I did my BMX career. And even when I had VSI, we had a lot of mountain bike products like tires and helmets and things like that, but not much mechanical stuff. But when I got into the drivetrain business, you're right, it's a very tough crowd. And I thought, for me, mountain bikes would be a similar business plan as the BMX. And I found several years into it, I just couldn't make, in mountain biking, I couldn't make every single part like we do for BMX and be successful with each and every one of them. Like a mountain bike handlebar, I think that we made a really great one, but we didn't have the resources to go against some of the big handlebar makers in mountain bike. Yeah. They're just some big players. So I found myself with all this great product,
but not enough resources to promote it all properly and go after handlebar makers, tire makers, or whatever we were making at the time. So we pulled back and decided to concentrate on drivetrain because there's only two people in that space. And then we found out it's extremely much more difficult than anything I've ever made in the past. And the investment of time, energy, and staff and all that is way beyond the BMX thing. But here I am. We have it. We're in it. We're doing well with it. But we have another 10 years. And that's on its own. Like I do ride everything in that segment, but I don't develop it from a sense of the engineering side, where in the BMX stuff, I'm a lot more hands-on to the development. But on the mountain bike side, we have a whole team of great engineers and great people leading that whole segment for me. I'm lucky. The only thing I really do in the mountain bike side is go ride it and give my opinion.
That's funny.
Anyway, but hats off to them, and we are in it, and we're doing it, and we're going to stick to the drivetrain, and hopefully we muster through this big canvas of big companies doing a great job with that same similar product, right?
Absolutely. And so for so many of us, you know, we have a sort of a generational BMX racing, I should say, has a kind of a generational identity crisis sometimes, where we don't really know what we are. I mean, like we some of us feel we can be a sport that fills stadiums with the pros and, you know, $100,000 challenges and stuff. Others of us think that it's a sport for kids and a wonderful, wonderful thing for families and a great local level opportunity for them, activity.
Right.
And then there's a lot of people who feel that it's in between. It can be both, and it can serve multiple goals and multiple ends. So do you think it's been that way for a while. So, I mean, do you think that that will ever change? Do you think that BMX racing will ever finally get real about what its true identity is, one way or the other? I'm not here to opinionate on that, but I am here to say, you know, it seems like we're trying to attack two fronts when the trend, and I know you're as the guy who has to write the checks in so many cases, you're the guy that has a finger on that pulse of the pros and of the direction that the pro class in BMX is heading, which, you know, it just seems like it's heading in a different direction than some might like. What are your thoughts on all that?
You know,
it's a lot to unpack.
It's a really good question. My opinion is this, is that I think there's a lot of us who want to see it get to $100,000 pro purses and fill stadiums. I think there's a lot of people who want that. And I think that's great that we have that aspiration. And I think we'll continue to claw away at that aspiration. But I think in the end, will it be that big? I have my reasons why I don't think it will. One of those is it, you know, you go to a race and you have, you know, 400 motos and it takes from 8 a.m. to midnight to run it.
Yeah.
How exciting can that be after every time the gate drops? So how do you make it a spectator sport, right?
Yeah.
And then if you go and just, you know, okay, let's just have a pro race, and, you know, now we don't have enough pros or a big enough track to excite people. And this is what the Olympics and the Supercross events and these kind of things were trying to attract, and I think that they're making headway, but it's going to be a slow process, right? And another thing besides that is because of the quantities of products sold to that individual sport, it keeps the big dogs out, right? And for like me, not being a big dog, it's okay because I get to be able to make a living and create product in a sport that doesn't have a lot of big players, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of sad too, because it'd be sure nice to get a couple of these big guys in and go back and pay the Christoph Levesque of the world, the one he made back in the 90s. If that was only available again, would the sport be different? I don't know, but the sales aren't there. And I think that's where the people in the industry have to realize the sales just aren't there at this moment to have that $100,000 person fill stadiums. You just don't have the sell-through. So, but it doesn't mean we all don't want it. It doesn't mean the Olympics isn't helping. But I just don't see it happening in the next couple of years.
Well, and so that gives rise to the question of, okay, so we're not there yet. But then it would also say that we've got to have, if we want that, we've got to have a plan to get there. And it doesn't seem, I mean, like we're doing beginner programs, which, you know, have been successful, have been popular. It's, you know, I think making a difference a little bit. And so that's good. But I guess the question is, like, you know, do you see it in, you know, when you sit down with your, you know, your sales ledger or your, when you're about to do some crystal balling on ordering, do you see, you know, these bigger numbers, you know, that we've been experiencing throughout the COVID, or is that starting to throttle back now?
No, well, we haven't caught up yet. It's funny, the orders that we get, we got some stuff in yesterday, and it's something we bought a year ago, right? We placed a PO a year ago, which we still really didn't have a handle on this a year ago. We knew it was coming and we were feeling it, but we ordered, and I ordered more of them than I would have ever ordered in the past. And they came in yesterday. We done a report, and they're already all sold.
Wow.
Right? So it's now it's more like, who do we give them to? Because there's going to be some unhappy people who weren't going to get them. So we placed another order for the same product a while back, but we were stuck with this. Your MOQ now is tenfold.
Oh, wow.
I was buying 300 of them, now I got to buy 3,000, right? And the 3,000 cost money that doesn't make sense when it comes to, I can't have 3,000 of these sitting around taking a year to sell, because I can't throw that kind of money out to get my return in over a year. So we were faced with that, but we pulled the trigger on it anyway and convinced the supplier to give us 3 shipments to help the cash flow. They agreed to that, but now since this shipment showed up yesterday, which is prior to this, the 3 shipments of the 3,000, I'm comfortable with the 3,000 coming over 3 shipments, because we're going to move that stuff, right?
Yes.
And it's not an exciting product. It's just basically a commodity. It's just a commodity product that we all wear out and need, right? So,
Very cool. Yeah. So it's been 10 years now since the ABA-NBL merger. In fact, we're about to see the 10th anniversary of the last NBL Grands next week, coming up for Louisville. What are your thoughts on that 10-year period? Do you see BMX racing as a much different? I mean, like, when I look at my photos, and I'm going to post a retrospective next week with my photos from that last NBL Grands. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of intents and signs, and, you know, the old BSI brands are all over the place. That was the heyday of that movement, right?
Right.
And so what, you know, in that 10 years, I mean, like, do you see BMX racing as much different? What's the landscape from your chair than it was then?
You know, I think that's probably why I got involved with ABC and wanted to do this with Mark is because in the last 10 years, I wasn't able to do more like I did at BSI. At BSI, I was able to make a helmet. I was able to make multiple brands and feed off each other. And, of course, I created, some people thought it was a monopoly of some sorts. And I also created some unfavorable, you know, partners in the business because I wasn't competing in every level with everybody. But we go back to BMX and how do I sustain and feed my people? And we need more stuff, you know. And that's why I started doing what we're doing. But if you go back 10 years ago, I was doing that. I was feeding, you know, a lot of different categories into one sport, which made us a healthy company. Not that box isn't healthy, just that we had a lot going on at the time. And but since then, has something changed? I don't think so, Mike. I think that USA BMX has good intentions. I think they spend some money at things and try, but they've been really fighting an uphill battle when it comes to growing the sport as a whole. And I don't really have the answer to that. We blame video games and we blame things, but I don't know. I think there's a subject we're going to talk about probably after we turn the camera off or the audio off that we can talk about, I think, that could be a game changer, but it's not here yet. It's not happening. And is it really the people that we have to find to do this? I mean, I think that we got to find really good people to help grow the sport who are interested in the sport, and how do you find those people and how do you compensate those people? And I think that's a big part of the sport. It's a chicken and egg thing. We want to grow the sport, so it takes quality people, but how do you afford quality people if the sport's small?
Right. Yeah. Well, we definitely have we have some good passion. We have a lot of passionate people, and hopefully we can we need to be able to deploy them and marshal them in a way that it focuses that passion. I mean, I'd love to see more racers exit their competition career and make a career of the sport. You know, I mean, we don't see that a lot.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I just saw something. You remember Christopher Blevins?
Yeah, of course.
He won the very first world championship short track mountain bike race yesterday in Italy.
Okay, interesting.
So he's now a world champion mountain bike racer.
Yeah, right.
So, and I remember when him and his dad were riding for me and Phantom On Track.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And, I remember the dad being smarter guy. He's a doctor. He wanted a lot for his kid. They loved BMX. But they found that, and I remember him trying to get mountain bike stuff out of me when Christopher started making that move, and I didn't have the product he really needed at that point. So he moved on to get better equipment, and now the kid's a world championship yesterday. So it can be done, but it took smart, passionate people who had some resources to get Christopher to that level. So it can be done. Yes, it can. Is BMX a place to start? I totally believe so. It's funny. I saw the photos of Christopher in the race. And the race, it's a short, mountain bike short track is basically a long BMX track.
Yeah.
Without, let's say, the same type of obstacles. The obstacles are a lot more subdued, and the course is longer, and you're going to go around and around and around and around for 20 minutes, right?
Okay.
So, but the obstacles is where Christopher excelled. He only won the race by 0.02. Hmm. So it was a sprint to the finish line. So he out-sprinted the guy, learned that from BMX, and he probably outmaneuvered the guy on the track, or at least most of the field, by his BMX skills.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he had to become extremely fit to do this. And it was a transition I had to make from BMX to mountain biking, was change my body makeup to be a little bit more fitter and long-distance rider versus a sprinter. But Christopher did it. So can it be done? Yes. But we need those type of people. And would I like to see more BMXers make that transition? Sure. But do they really want to put the effort into it, and do they want to go through what it takes, like the Blevins family? Right?
So. Yeah, yeah. So do you think the pro class, the pro class has been, it's had its highs and lows over the 50 years or 40-some-odd years of BMX racing. What are your thoughts on it for the next five? I mean, we won't even take it out 10 years, but just the next five. Do you think that we'll have a pro class still, I mean, of some form, or will it – I have my own theory on it, which I've shared, and this is your show, so I want to hear your opinion on it.
I think. Well, it goes back to sales, right?
Yeah.
And us being box company, we only sell so many BMX stuff. I can't afford a top pro just to ride for box. I just can't do it. I can't. I don't want to say measly salaries they got now, but some of the salaries that are out there. And the expenses it takes to get these guys around, Box as a component-only company can't afford it. So that's why you don't see any high-profile guys under a tent. What we do with Box is try to focus on all the frame makers who make the frame and then try to support the pros with the parts. But that makes us a secondary sponsor, not a primary. Can the pros grow? Can we see something more for them? I think we, as the industry, in the conversation you and I'll have later, I think we have to make heroes out of these guys again. And I think that we don't have heroes. We have a few, but we don't have this group of heroes that was like in the 80s and 90s where these kids look up to. And do we have the talent on the track? Obviously we do. Do we have big stadium type tracks that are fun to watch? Yes. Do we have equipment that's way better than it was in the 80s? Yes. What do we not have? And for me, do we have TV coverage? We have all these things. For me, we don't showcase these heroes properly. And that's what made the sport in the 80s, that these kids couldn't wait till the magazine got to their door and open it up to see what Toby Henderson was doing that month, right? Or anybody else, right?
Oh, no, that's for sure. That's absolutely right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So anyway.
No, it's true.
Let's talk about what Harry was doing, what Stewart was doing, whatever, right? So I think we got to create the same thing. Now, how do you do that? Because we're not going to it's instant gratification because of social media. We're not going to wait for a magazine to come to our mailbox, but we can still have the heroes in the way we present news today, right? Why not? But someone has to take the rein and do it and run with it, like a Bob Osborne did to the rest of us, right? We need those type of guys. John Carr. We need those kind of guys to make our pros heroes. For me, that's kind of where I am right now. I could be completely wrong, but
no, I think you're right. I mean, and unfortunately, it's you know, it's a pay issue. You know, obviously, we talk about the fact that everyone wants to be in a magazine, but no one wants to advertise in one, read one, or subscribe to one. And so that is a checkmate that we just can't get out of, you know. And hero worship, I always say this, but it's true. Hero worship works differently today than it did. Like, I was a kid that would have posters, you know, those centerfold posters that would be up on my bedroom wall. I don't necessarily think that any kid today would or is interested in doing that. So what are they interested in? I don't know. We're going to find out. But it is it's a fascinating, you know, a case study in sociology, if nothing else.
Well, I can say this: BMX racing makes you a darn good bike rider.
Yes,
it does. From the physical standpoint to the technical standpoint, it does make you a great bike rider. So anybody who is enthusiast in bicycles and want to become better bicyclists, they need to go around the BMX track. I don't care what sport you're in, right? Go on the BMX track. So that alone couldn't hurt us, right? To other disciplines involved on the track. And I've had experiences back in my career where people said, why are you good at a certain aspect of cycling? And it was because of my BMX background.
Absolutely. Right?
So that's happened many, many times in my life. So I kind of encourage these other guys to come over and ride BMX, and maybe that's part of it. And I think if we start to create heroes and people to look up to, however that's portrayed through the media, I think we'll see some surgence. Now, we are in a great spot. You know, USA BMX has held the biggest nationals in the history of the sport, or history of USA BMX, this year.
Yeah.
Every nationals beat and trumped and beat previous years. So if we can't do anything with it now, we're never going to be able to do something with it, right?
Yeah. Well, one thing's for sure. I mean, you know, we here at the BMX Newsroom, we always enjoy seeing news being made. And Toby, you're one of those prime newsmakers out there that we always drop everything, and we love to see those come through, especially when we get a little nudge and get a little head start on it. So we appreciate that. It's really, you know, it's always a pleasure having you on the show. But this time, in, you know, kind of the current market conditions, the evolution and the sort of as how things are changing, it's really a special treat to have you on today. And hopefully we can count on more from you as, you know, as the American BMX Company project develops. And we'll certainly be at Tulsa to see that Race Inc. frame, the retro mod one. Uh-huh. And so any final words before we sign it off?
No, I think I appreciate you having me. I love talking to the BMX News team. So, I need some time. Give me the next 5 years and we'll have some great products coming our way. So, just going to put our head down and go to work. And we appreciate you recognizing that.
That's awesome. Well, it's an exciting time for you, Toby, and for all of us who are fans of yours and also of the products that you bring to market. And we're going to hit you up for some bro deals, maybe. But in all seriousness, you know, we hope you're going to come back on the show in a few months or however long it takes to get things up and running, and show us this. You know, we could do a camera one, that one, that video podcast, and you can show us how it's going.
Awesome. Hey, thanks for having me, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Well, for Toby Henderson, I'm Mike Carruth, and thanks so much for joining us on this episode of Announcer's Tower.